Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy. The number one fuck Johnny G, John Gabrus, joining me as always in the High and Mighty studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabrus. Arthur, give him a shout out. All right, perfect. As always, impeccable timing. Dude barks when I record other podcasts, but fine now. All right, also in the High and Mighty studios, a returning guest making his three-peat, but yes. Bringing
Whoa.
His life partner. You know, like, I don't, what do you call this? That's you might recognize these guys from the No Joke podcast here on the HeadGum Network, the longest running sketch team I know, Harvard Sailing Team.
It won't die.
Maybe your favorite white rap comedy duo, Snakes.
It won't die.
From corporate, from game show, the TV show, or whatever that thing is fucking called. Guys, I got Billy Scafuri and Adam Lustig in the head.
Number two and three, fuck.
It hey, is 11 in the morning. My neighbors hate me, but I'm so pumped you guys are here.
Your dog is as energized as you are right now.
I know. He gets a little wound up during the fuck boys, and that's usually I can get him to do something on mic, but not this time.
How aware do you think Art is that there's a podcast happening, right? I mean, like, how sort of clued into the podcast of it all do you think he is?
He's always like, dude, get on Patreon.
Yeah,
he's telling me, he's like, no, if you want to make money, get on Patreon.
Yes.
And I'm like,
monetize that fan base.
Yeah.
It's like, God, you're right, Artie.
He's like, just work on your screenplay and fucking become a comedian like you want, not a podcast host.
The biggest cash out is at the end of a screenplay. Come on, Dad. Remember, Dad.
I think for him, though, it's an exciting thing because there's just always new people.
New people.
Yeah. And they sit there and he gets to sit next to them.
Yes. Intimate pup.
Yes.
Like, all up in that junk right now.
I've yet to have someone be like, I'm uncomfortable with a dog.
Adam's usually scared of around dogs.
I'm fairly dog in general. In general, I'm fairly dog phobic, but I'm also a rational human being who's not immune to adorable things like Arthur. So yeah, it's like I'm also a normal human.
Yeah. I'm scared of dogs, but I appreciate cute
things. Yeah.
Are you
scared
of any animals, Gabrus? You don't seem like you'd be scared of any. Like on a hike, I feel like if there was a big snake or a bear or
you would charge to it.
I wouldn't be irrationally scared, but I would be like, let's not fuck with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But I think I can handle it. I think the thing that would bug me out is a scorpion or a big spider.
Forget it.
But like, it would have to be a cartoonishly big, like, even a black widow doesn't real. The spider would have to be like hand size. Or a scorpion. Like, just those things look much like monsters.
Yes.
And I would have a hard time. I think I would rather see a croc. Like, I would rather, like, be on like hiking, run you.
Yes.
A crocodile.
Jesus.
That's big. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have survival skills?
What?
None. Do you have survival skills?
None.
So Renfair doesn't prep you with any survival skills.
No, the Renfair, the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing the Renfair gives me is a sunburn. Being out all day drinking. I have no survival skills. I'm a little city boy.
Long Island doesn't camp.
No.
We don't camp in Long Island.
I'm a beach kid.
Yeah.
Right. So I spend every summer, every day of the summer Right. At Jones Beach.
Yes.
Right. When I was a child, until I went there as a customer, and then as an adult,
as
I worked
a customer.
There.
Yeah, yeah.
But you weren't hunting.
A patron.
You weren't hunting at Field 4.
No. Yeah. Besides for pussy.
Yeah, exactly.
That was such an alley-oop. Exactly. That was such a Long Island alley-oop.
Club 4, as we call
that. That is ridiculous.
Were you a lifeguard, John?
Yes,
oh,
I was.
Oh, baby.
Hey, yeah. guys, that's have the... I talked about lifeguarding yet?
Have we touched on this?
That is the Gabrus brand.
Yeah. Blue and yellow sweatshirt.
Yeah, everyone. Blue and yellow is Town of Hempstead. I was Town of Hempstead for 2 years.
Wait, then you slid over to who?
State Parks. Jones is state. I worked. I worked at like Town of Hempstead is like Lido and Long Beach, okay. and then some pools. I worked at Forest City and Wantagh.
Whoa.
As a 16-year-old.
What are you getting 16. Out of that?
When you're 16, because you have to be 17 to be a Jones Beach guard, and the test is super hard
in the ocean.
In the ocean, it's no. You have to go through rookie training, and you have to compete against other people in four different events.
Jeez. Okay.
And you get placed in, like, you have to pass four tests, which is like a three-quarter mile sand. This is what it was in 2004, 2003. Three-quarter mile sand run, a run, swim, run in the ocean, which is like 400 meters, 400 meters, 400 meters.
It's like a triathlon.
100 meters in the pool in under a minute 15, which is not hard. And then a cross-chest carry of a dummy to demonstrate, like, you can
handle. How heavy is the dummy?
They're like one of those like water dummies, so they float a little, but they're like 40 pounds.
Wow, whatever,
wait,
wow, that's serious.
Yeah, just to demonstrate that, and then
let's do that.
You get timed, you get timed and all that, and then you get placed on a board in order, and then you get to choose open slots at the beach. So the top five rookies all get to go to like the cool beaches and be trained right away. But guys like me who are way down there who just survived, I'm at Hexar State Park, which is literally the end of the Southern State. Yeah.
This is your screenplay.
I wrote a lifeguard screenplay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you the underdog lifeguard that somehow saves the day?
There's a boysofsummer.pdf.
Yes, there is.
Send me that PDF. Yeah. I want to read that PDF.
Of course.
Sorry if you've touched on this in your podcast interminably. Maybe you have, but did you ever
talk about the same things
constantly?
Every week.
Same. Did you ever have to like save a life or save?
Yes.
Really?
I've never had to do CPR, but I've had to pull people out of the ocean.
No kidding.
And I'm not exaggerating, over 100 times.
What?
Because that's what happens. That's like
riptide?
Yeah.
What was the main cause?
It's always like a current, and it's always also like people in jeans.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's always like some kid is like in jean shorts and he's playing and he doesn't know how to swim and he like bops out, and then all of a sudden I'm like, trouble.
Here's a problem, Dave. You're in jeans.
Yeah.
Here's the first problem.
You got to mark what you see. Yeah. See something, say something. That guy's in jeans. He might be a problem.
That's like true profiling. Like, but that's like important. But
this is for their own survival.
Yes.
Right. Literally, I know the rules. They're wearing jeans in the
ocean. They're
jeans
in the,
They do. I worked at the West Bathhouse Pool, which is like the Field 5 pool. There's two pools.
Yeah.
The West Bathhouse Pool has a specific advantage, is that or disadvantage, but however you look at it, a bus goes from Jamaica directly to there.
Right there.
Jamaica, Queens. So we get a lot of city kids who are like, my first time in a pool.
Right.
Literally, that's most confident kid ever, just walks off, gets on the dime board, goes, what's up, Mr. Lifeguard? Jumps in the pool and just drops. Right. Never comes up. And you're like, I'm got to dive in and save this
meatball
kid.
Meatball subs. Yeah. Meatball subs in the deep end.
Okay. Where are my heavy boots?
It's that scene in Caddyshack where the caddies get like 10 minutes to actually go to the pool. They don't even take off their clothes. They just sprint into
they
the
like
pool.
Long jean shorts with a belt on. I'm like, I can't swim in that. And
those
I'm practically a professional swimmer.
Timberlands don't float.
Yeah.
Like, those Timbs are not helping you in the defense.
it's so true. And then you're like, oh, this. And then you go to Field 4, where I worked, and Field 6 are super busy.
Yeah.
And that's just like, if there's a rip current day, I was told when I was working at Field 4, or was it Field 6, one summer, that in 1 hour, I went into the water 21 times.
Wow.
Why not just
so
stay
just
in the water?
At the shore.
I did. Exactly.
Yeah,
on like literally at the end, I just stayed out
shin
on a
height, right? And just purl that way.
That's what they do is, because then you can't see as well, so someone has to spot for you.
Height.
But what they'll do is put a dude out on a paddleboard or a kayak or a female, put a lifeguard out, and they'll like be around where the suck is and be like, get the fuck out of here.
Here's my question. You save 21 people or pull 21 people in an hour.
Yeah.
What does it take for you to say everyone out of the ocean?
Less than
every 3 minutes, you're like, oh, I guess I'm making another save.
It's sometimes we'll block an area out that has like a rip in it or like a suck, whatever you call it.
But you want to keep people in the ocean. That's why they're here.
We have to close the ocean. If there's lightning or sharks or like the only two things.
Those are the main things.
Yeah, we've only had one
out.
Shark in my entire time.
Did you see it?
Go on.
Tell us. Tell us.
I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast before.
I bet you have.
I'm sure I have. Yeah. We had this one dude we worked with. His name was Newman. He had a twin brother. They were fullback and tailback out in like Bellport, Suffolk County.
Are they
total?
In the screenplay?
They looked like action figures.
Yeah,
they were so ripped. Yeah. Newman's we clear the beach because someone sees a shark fin.
Yes.
And we're like, oh shit, let's go. Everyone's out. It's literally like Jaws. We're like, get out. And people are like, I don't want to get out. We're like, there's a shark. All of a sudden, everyone's
running. Aren't you scared? Like, oh shit, I'm the shark guy.
Right? Well,
yeah.
Like, I'm not, that doesn't scare me for some reason. I feel like in the ocean, I'm just like, I'm on your turf. I get it if you're mad at me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the one
the
coming
ocean
in here.
Is the shark's house.
Yeah,
the
if a shark comes into my house, he's got to be afraid of me.
Yes.
And the lack of water.
Yeah.
He sees you at McKeeb's in Hempstead, and that shark.
He's fucked.
You're
he's
at my fucked. House now.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. See the fin.
Yeah, if I line up against him in the scrum, the shark, that's
you're
when I'm confident. Yeah.
Good welcome, luck out here, shark.
Welcome to the party, shark. But we're all out. We decide, like, because we're fucking 21 and dumb, we're like, we got to get in the water and find the shark.
Why?
So we're out.
What's your plan?
Because we just want to see it. We've never, like,
touch it. Maybe touch it.
Yeah. Because, like, sometimes you get a little bit of sea life in the Atlantic out there.
Yeah.
Here, I go to the beach in Malibu a bunch and way more shit.
Sharks.
Right.
Like,
multiple.
Like real sharks.
Families of.
Get super high and then go in the water and then like four giant sharks are swimming near you. Then literally, it was like the last day of the season last year. We Googled it. They're leopard sharks. They're harmless. But I haven't gone back to the new year yet.
It's
and there's
terrifying.
A little bit of tentativeness where I'm like...
Say there's no more, of course. Sharks, dude. Yeah. Sharks.
Yeah. But apparently leopard sharks don't even bite. So we're going to just go back and like try to... We were trying to grab them last
time.
They
tell jokes. Yeah.
You could tell me that anything doesn't bite, and when it's right in front of me, I'm like, that thing will bite.
Harmless
of course it will bite.
Like a paradox.
I don't need it to know... I don't even need to know if it bites to be afraid of something.
Right.
That's like...
Of course.
That's fast, and I can't always see.
Right. So you get in the water.
So we're all out in the water, kayaks, the door, like the little rowboat. We're all just like looking for the shark. And we're like, I guess we don't
in
find it.
Boat.
We
Jesus.
Get yeah. We get out there. We know it's not going to be a fucking white. You know what I mean? It's going to be like a sand shark or something. It's going to be like 6 feet.
Yeah,
it better be a white.
Or the lesser beta sharks.
It's going to be a cuck shark.
Cuck shark.
This shark lets you fuck its wife in front of him
and film it for the internet.
I went to a hotel room and fucked a female shark in front of another shark in a tank.
The shark video.
We were on my turf, and yet they were in control. So I'm really spun around.
I don't know who wins the power dynamic in this moment. But we all like get out of the water, and Newman goes in, and Newman's like standing in the water, like waist deep water, and he's facing the shore, and it's truly like a cartoon. Like, he's like, there's no sharks, guys. And we're like, aha, all right, Newman, get out of the water. You know, like
this short film is called Newman Goes In, by the way.
Newman Goes In.
And then all of a sudden, Newman's like we're watching Newman, and then we literally see a fin. It could be 8 feet behind him because of perspective, but in our mind, it's a foot and a half behind him. And we're going, Newman, there's a shark, And he's like, ha, ha, ha.
Like, this is ridiculous.
Saved by the Bell episode.
Like, literally.
Oh, my God.
He's like, sure, shark, you silly. And he's so ripped, but he's kind of goofy guy.
Sure.
And he's like, sure, no problem. And we're like, Newman. And look, and he's like,
this is scary.
You guys are, and then we're like, he turns around, looks, sees the shark, looks back at us, the buff. Most badass I've ever seen goes like high pitched volume and
went in.
High steps.
He's walked on water like Jesus.
College walk on tailback.
Right.
He was so fast.
Sprinting.
4.440 in the ocean.
Yeah, he literally was on top of the water. It was fucking insane. Like his legs were moving like the road runner.
He got in the boat?
He sprinted all the way to shore.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
The Earth's boat.
Yeah.
Shore.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you, John, have ever been face-to-face with a deadly animal, necessarily?
No, I have not. Okay. I've been in the water looking for that shore. One of the things we used to do at Jones was when a school of blues would go by, we'd all get out on kayaks and paddleboards, and you can like kayak kind of in the middle of them, and they're all just like bouncing around.
Are blues blue whales?
Blue fish.
Oh.
Blue
fish.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. School of blue whales.
Like,
those things are like the size of buses.
You guys had quite a summer.
Jones Beach. Huh?
Sheesh. I'll check it out.
I would shit a biscuit if a fucking whale showed up.
Dude, have you gone whale
beach.
Watching?
No.
It is surreal. Marina, my girl, loves whales.
Can you do it out here?
Yeah, you can do it out here. There's like specific pods like an hour outside of here where like whale guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these whale places out here are like kind of a coin flip. Marina Del Rey, you'll get whales. Mm. But dude, these things are submarines.
Yeah.
They're real.
Apartment buildings.
They're like, I know that we say like, alligators are dinosaurs, and like certain animals still, rhinoceroses kind of look like dinosaurs. Nope, it's the whales. The whales are the dinosaurs.
They're just masses.
And they have like land masses growing off of, there's like entire ecosystems on their back.
They're like Ego the Living Planet from Marvel. There's like full barnacles that crabs live in and shit.
And every time you see one, it's like, why am I on this boat? Yeah. There's monsters everywhere.
Yeah, I gotta do that.
They're friendly. They're monsters.
I gotta go whale watching. That sounds fucking
changes
awesome.
Your whole perspective on what's out there. Like when you see it, it's like, that's real, that's out there.
Yes.
All the time.
I one time heard like someone who was like a deep sea explorer in an interview or on Blue Planet or one of those shows I was watching.
Yeah.
Someone was like, the deep ocean is the same as outer space.
Yeah,
you have like literally no idea what's going on.
And it's pitch black.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And, like, and then like they go down, like the Blue Planet has like that super deep episode in season two. This is the most stonery thing to say, but
seen it.
And there's fucking like those fish that glow and have no eyes.
Create
and they're
their
like
own
adapted
light.
To like, they're like
correct.
Bioluminescent. You're like, this is insane.
Right.
Yeah. And people are like, it's as unexplored as our galaxy.
Let's go one step. Let's go one step more stoner. Do you think that there's weirder shit on the bottom of the deepest parts of the ocean or in outer space?
Oh, who knows?
Yeah.
I'm like asking you what you would
alien
guess.
Creatures.
I would guess, and here's my stoner answer, the same.
Whoa!
One for one.
Yeah. The aliens crashed here years ago and can live underwater. And
I believe that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We call alien sharks now.
So do you believe in aliens? Do you guys think that there's an alien out there?
I think so.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, what are the odds that there isn't?
Like that have created a, that have gotten to the point where not just like bacteria, but like have some sense of similarity in like a community like humans.
I wonder that I'm curious about.
Or is it just like bacteria growing on the same rock and that's like life on other planets?
Right, and those that's like aliens. The beginning of something crazy.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah. Or is there like a currency out there? Is there like a city?
Is it hubristic to believe that we're the only functioning like things
I
in the universe?
I think it is hubristic to believe that.
But maybe it's narcissistic to make us think that anything that grows and evolves should become how we became.
Yes, exactly.
Right. The paramecium or the bacteria is actually the final evolution.
Exactly.
Right. Because it's indestructible. The life form is longer than a human life form, and it's truly the way to carry.
Preach, Johnny, preach.
We are stone sober. Listeners
it's 11
a.m. sober.
Yeah.
A cup of coffee deep. Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah. But this is the kind of shit I want to talk about. Yeah.
I'm comfortable. I am sitting in a comfortable couch.
Exactly.
The aliens is like, it's only a matter of time, right? Like, we're going to run into one.
Or is there already information and is like an Area 51 or whatever that's, is that actually harboring information they just don't think that we can handle?
I mean, like, it used to be to me, like, it's unbelievable that the government would hide something like that.
Yeah.
And then you find out all the other shit the government hides and you're like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, well, that makes just as much sense.
Yes, exactly.
I would actually say just give the government less credit and say that they're not smart enough to maintain that information and that they would have fucked it up by
now. Yeah, how come all these guys, like, leaking these fucking memos from the White House can't leak?
These
well,
are just
there
dumb.
Has been,
they're dumb and savvy.
But there has been a few, like, information dumps about
they came
UFOs.
Right out and said it. It just got buried. Like in the past month, the U.S. government was like, "We've been monitoring extraterrestrial activity, like at Area 51, and exactly what you thought this whole time. We've been doing it this whole time."
And people are like, "I
don't care.
Where's the piss tape?"
Exactly. Literally, that's basically.
Or where's the alien?
Yeah.
Show me the, like an article or a report just doesn't carry the weight as like, all right, there's aliens. Show me the alien.
I tried
in
my
the
best.
Tube.
I told them there was an alien. Thought they would shut it down.
Exactly.
Now they're still on my case. We've got the biggest
follow-up.
I've got the biggest, hugest alien you can imagine.
It is the human narcissism comes into me. I think Billy, you and I have talked about this before, but like when like the sort of idea, the human idea of aliens, they're like green, just tall humans with like eyes and a mouth and language.
Right.
It's like aliens are probably bacteria or like just a noxious gas.
Right. Yeah.
It's like how narcissistic of us.
There's
like
a beam of light that just communicates via.
We've got guns and they're like gas, just like clears us out in like a waft.
Just to assume that they, of course, they probably look like humans.
Right.
It's just like that's the most sort of human narcissistic, human centric.
Did you guys see Arrival?
Yeah,
I fucking
thought it was
loved
cool as
movie.
Hell. Thought it was awesome.
Did you see it?
Did not.
Oh, you gotta watch
it. Fucking
dude.
Awesome.
It's really
that's
fun.
That's the Matt Damon.
No,
movie?
That's
Amy Adams. The communicate with.
That's the alien.
Hawkeye.
Maybe?
What's his name?
What happens in the movie?
Jeremy Renner,
that's
Forrest
right.
Whitaker.
Yes.
What happens in the movie is aliens land, and it's kind of like a realistic exploration, but they want to communicate.
Yeah.
And they bring in like
a linguist. Like an international linguist.
Oh. And that is the highlight of the movie. I've never been so pumped to see a scientists break down a sentence.
Yeah.
Of like, well, why are we trying to teach them this? And she's like, well, once you learn if they understand possession, then they can understand like who owns it. And it's like the simplest, and she just breaks it down.
Pretty amazing.
I have goosebumps talking about it. Seriously. Yeah, that's legit. I was so, it's so good.
Sold. Yeah.
And it's just so, it feels, and this is like the most, but it feels like the most realistic portrayal of what would happen if it was a peaceful situation.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's also weird, and like Hollywood has sort of like trained us to think that if there are alien life forces, they are innately and intrinsically antagonistic.
They
hate us. That's right.
They want what we
have. Something to be combated. Right.
Because it is it's Cold War. It's Nazis. It's just analogs throughout history.
That's right.
And sci-fi.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Some sort of like theoretical threat. But I found that movie weirdly moving for the same reason. I was like, like they probably might just want to talk.
Right.
If they got here, they would just want to talk.
Yeah.
Right.
Or they need our help.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I always think is like, what if they come here and they're like, this would be like the best NRA statement ever. Yeah. The aliens come like, we need guns.
Right.
Shit's fucked up in our home planet. Do you have any guns?
That's
and like
so
Dana Loesch cracks her knuckles.
Here.
I'd like to imagine that if the aliens were bad, that in the movie version of humanity, the humans and the animal kingdom would get together and be like, we need to figure out how to communicate and work together.
Like we work with the gorillas.
Like this is planet Earth.
Yeah.
This is team planet Earth.
We team
Earth.
Up with the whales.
Every life form on planet Earth has to war against something else. We need to work together.
One step, like bigger, smaller than that is we would have to be like Russians, the Iraqis,
and very
everything.
First thing.
Yeah, we'd have to be like
before we like get the whales and the bears. Yeah, we'd have to like get
right. Before we're riding goats in the combat. We have to like, but I think aliens would be the thing that would unify the Earth.
It's,
like,
if we
like,
would hope.
This
we
is
would
team
hope.
Earth.
Yeah,
we're talking team Earth.
Yes,
but now we're wondering if what if people already have aliens? What if the Iraqis? What if ISIS got aliens?
Yo, that's true. No, that's true.
What if ISIS is aliens?
That's actually true. I never thought of that.
That's actually true.
That's
I never thought.
True. I never thought of that.
That's a great phrase.
That's actually
true.
I
never
thought
of that.
It's like, wait, that way.
I feel like my friends in Long Island, anytime they heard a new fact, they would just say that.
That's actually true.
Yeah.
It's actually true. Have you told John about Rizzo's 5-second rule theory, by the way?
Speaking of, this is another Long Island. His name's Pete Rizzo, so of course he's from Long Island.
Who's Rizzo? Fuck Rizzo. I put mustard on this shit and eat it.
Rizzo,
it's like a Jerky Boys
jerky,
character.
Literally.
It is, literally. And so there's a number of Rizzo stories, but basically he'll loft out a confident fact that he doesn't know is true into a conversation, and if anyone calls him out, he'll immediately go, really? So that's the credibility just to set Rizzo. Yeah. That's the credibility. He'll loft out any fact he thinks is true until someone says really, and then he'll just believe them. Okay. Yeah. So one time I get home from work and Rizzo's sitting on the couch. He's my roommate. And he looks like stunned a little and like surprised by something. I'm like, Rizzo, what's up? And he looks up at me and he goes, yo, you know the 5-second rule? And he's like really like processing something. And I'm like, yeah, like when you drop the food. And he's like, yeah, I just heard this and this is a fact. It's actually a 10-second rule.
That's a fact.
I didn't know what to do next.
Oh,
I supported him.
Yeah.
I was just literally no doubt.
Yeah.
All right, I'll tell you.
I've always heard of it as the 3-second rule.
Can't believe I've been wrong.
But for him to be convinced, like, oh, that's a real rule.
Yeah.
Things change after 10 seconds. I better tell my friends.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch this segue. That is positively enjoyable.
Oh, well done, John.
20 minutes in. I'm going to say the topic today is positivity.
Positivity.
Yeah.
But as always, tangents are not only welcome, but encouraged.
Exactly.
So I'm down to talk about lifeguarding and aliens any day.
Rizzo, whatever it takes.
When we were leaving the gym yesterday, Gabrus, we were walking back and you're like, what do you think we should talk about tomorrow? And I was like, I don't know. What do you think? And you're like, I don't know. Like maybe being nice. Like, you and Adam are like always being nice.
I tried to find like two things I know about both of you that I enjoy about both of you. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about comedy.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
So I was
no comedian does.
I'm like, you are two of the nicest. And it's not nice because nice has a layer of phoniness to it.
Yeah.
And
right.
I don't know
right.
what percentage, if any of it is put on. And that's fine if it is because it is appreciated by anyone around you. But it can't be 100% that you guys are putting on. You're too genuine. I was telling someone the other day this. Maybe it was you, Adam, when we were in South By. I said, I was like, I talk to Billy all the time about this. Working out in the morning has really changed the rest of my day. But I can't help but think part of it is I see Billy first thing in the morning.
It's a good thing.
Like, talk to her for an hour, and he's always like, "That's great, JG. Yeah. Good work, JG. Like, yeah, that's awesome."
Exactly.
I'm like, leaving. I'm like, "Yeah, dude. Billy likes me."
My man.
It is true.
I mean,
it is true. It really is. And, and I'm like, yeah. I leave. I get to work out in the morning, see Billy. For those figuring this out, Billy and I work out at the with Amir Blumenfeld, same time in the morning.
Every day.
Not necessarily together, but we'll finish with a little cardio.
We hold each other accountable.
We hold each other accountable.
Oh, that's interesting. So what are the schematics of that? You guys arrive together, say, have a good workout, split off?
Yeah, him and Amir usually work out together. Okay.
Yeah, we've been doing it for like a year together, so we've like developed the same
routine.
Plan.
Yeah. I came late. I don't show up late. Yes. But all you really need, I think the thing that fixes this is the evening text.
The text where it just holds everyone accountable.
Yeah, who's going? Like, who's in tomorrow? And I'm like, if I say yes now, I can't bail at 7:30.
Totally. Yeah. And which is like good to hold yourself accountable with like annoying little meaningless bullshit that.
That text that goes where I'm like, am I going to go to the gym in the morning? I could have like another. And then Billy's
expecting
text, like,
me.
Who's in? Yeah. And I'm like, fuck, I'm in.
But it's great. I grew up with like team sports my whole life.
Same.
You know? And so it's like, I always needed, like, I wasn't just like born with that, just like, hey, like leadership quality. Like, I learned that like you need to have people around you who are like, I'm going to make you do shit you don't want to do, but when it's over, you're going to be better off for it. And then, so like, it's like, I take that.
Also, there's that like quid pro quo of that, like, you helping keep us accountable is like, for you, you can't skip on Amir.
That's right,
either.
Exactly.
Yeah. Totally. And I actually work out a little harder when I'm working out with Amir, because it's like, shit, now I have to, like, if I'm going to take a leadership role for in him. Any capacity, I have to actually look harder and work harder, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, that's also just like, I forget what it is. I wish I knew the name, but like, it's a scientific term for the fact that you are being observed affects the outcome.
Schrodinger's
like,
cat.
That is a thing. That is a thing. Oh, okay, yeah. I think Schrodinger's cat is the cat is
alive or dead.
Alive or dead. If you don't look at it, you can't tell.
That's
you don't,
right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right. That's right. You're right.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the it's like, it's not Moore's law, but it's somebody's law. It's a name law. People will tweet at me and and just the mere fact that you're being observed changes your behavior. Whether you're like you know, like diets where they put one person on this, one person on placebo.
Yes.
But the placebo person is still trying harder because they know they're being observed.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly
right. So it's one of those things where you go to the gym and someone's watching you and you're like, all right, well, I just explained to him how to do military press. If I'm going to sit down and do military press, I better do
also,
it right.
LA is like a kind of, like, while it's a city, it's also very isolating. And like people like us, we spend a lot of our time alone. And so there's something to be said for just starting your day with like a communal experience with people you like.
That's true, man.
And like,
man.
You, like, just to like be happy for an hour and know that you have friends waiting for you in this town is rare, and like you have to actually work towards it, so it's good to make it a routine
and to frame the day like that.
I pretty much came up with High and Mighty for that reason.
For sure.
I was like, to talk to someone.
We started a live show called Cindy Crawford. It was like a two year running live show, and just then we turned it into a podcast
just to have friends.
Right. Yeah.
Just to literally have friends.
Yeah. It's smart. Yeah. It's smart out here. And I will also say, side effect of going to the gym in the morning that I didn't realize is like just seeing other people that you don't see normally, like hot dudes, hot chicks, fat weirdos, creeps, lascivious gay dudes.
You take it for granted in New York.
Yeah.
When you're on the subway, it's like, at least I'm seeing like fashion and choices and people and storylines.
Yes.
Here, it's like really isolating.
Because you're in cars.
Totally.
That's right.
Yeah, you're in cars or your house. And then when you go to the gym, it's like, we're amongst people and you're like, oh, these people are fucking weird.
Yeah.
Oh, he's fucking weird. Yes.
Some people start getting familiar and it's just like these little things and it seems small, but it starts to just like blossom into a routine.
The notion of familiar strangers that are familiar.
It's enough
a nice thing.
It's enough for me that Mark from Road Rules.
Does he go to the gym?
He goes.
That was like your Road Rules, Mark?
Yeah. I was like, you know, that's Mark from Real Road Rules season one and also Real World Road Rule Challenge for a decade. And he still looks good. He's got to be 48.
I wonder how many people are saying all of your MTV credits to their friends at the gym.
Yeah.
I mean, you're that person 10 years later.
That guy from Geico is at the gym all the time.
I think I saw him wild and out once.
Yeah, exactly.
That's me. One of the trainers was like, one time was like, oh man, I see you. I see you squat and deadlift, and I was like, "Yeah, I don't really only do those lifts." He's like, "That's good," and I'm like, "I love your shoes because I wear Chucks when I lift."
Yes.
And he's like, "I love your shoes," and then I'm like, "Okay, man." Cool. He was like, "That's really great," and then like the next day he goes, hey, are you the guy from Wild Man? I was like, oh, you were like...
He went to sleep with that question.
The shoes was the soft opener. Right, the shoes was the
please
way
come
in.
Back. Please come back. Please come back.
He was like, he did not... He like took his headphones out and spoke to me, so I know he's a reasonable person I can ask.
It was for Wild and Out?
What?
It was for Wild and Out?
Yeah.
Really? Do you get recognized for that show a lot?
Yeah, it has it. a rabid fan base.
Yeah. Got it.
Oh, and yeah. It's crazy.
Got it. That
Nick
makes
Cannon.
Sense.
Nick Cannon has a whole Nick wave Cannon of fans.
That was my worst, most hated audition in all of Los Angeles. Oh, God, oh really? Boy. I'll stay away from it, but it was like deeply uncomfortable.
I could only imagine.
Insults.
Yeah, freestyling. Did you have to do it too?
I think I
made... Because you guys are also... rappers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like it in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. The first audition was fine, and then there was a callback, and I just remember that, like, I was like, oh, they're like laughing at me as much as they're like laughing at my jokes.
I'm the butt of the joke as well.
Yeah, like it's like this isn't the right dynamic, and I'm not liking what's happening. Yeah.
Oh, I'm completely comfortable in that dynamic.
Yeah, right, right.
Because guess what? If they're laughing at you, the check still clears.
My man's laughing with you.
Yeah.
I admire you, John Gabris.
Exactly.
I would get pulled to the front during the Wild Style because they had like fat jokes they were sitting on.
Of course.
And they were like, bring the fat white guy out. Did all the token shit. Yeah. You know,
That's the thing. It's not good to be like in shape in comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You get a lot of shit for it, Bill.
I'm not trying to be like woe is me. Like, no, I work out.
No,
but like,
true.
It's also like
not the first person I talk to about this.
Yeah. Really? I mean, it's like, it's just not inherently like Larry David said he wasn't funny until he went bald, and Ricky Gervais said he wasn't funny until he got fat.
What's funny about confidence?
It's like we want just something to laugh at, or if you have a, I don't know. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the Wild and Out sense, it was like, oh, I'm just going to be like the athletic white guy. Like, this isn't for Bill.
I feel like 80% of the Tosh hate is just like, you good looking son of a. It's just like, oh, you like handsome bastard. Get out of our lane. Like, we all have asthma. Right. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah. It's brutal. And well, I think more so than Tosh, the thing that pisses me off in the business is like the hot comedy adjacent dudes and women who book sitcoms where it's like they're comedic
actors with perfect teeth.
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, hey, I'm glad to see. But like, what happened to like the freaks? Like, Michael Richards, poor choice, Richards could not work.
Point taken.
Costanza.
Right.
Like,
that's
these
right.
people would not get. No, yes. And they're Jason Alexander, and they're so talented.
Yeah. So talented.
Seinfeld is like not attractive enough to be in a
that's
network
right.
sitcom.
I don't watch television starring hot people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I'm not like, oh, they're so, like, I'm not, I don't gravitate towards that. Like, I assume you guys don't as well. Like, to me, like, the real television has real looking people.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm glad to find real looking people attractive. I will. Yeah.
That's why I go to the gym.
Yeah. I would say like everybody on Search Party is good looking, but the thing you wouldn't say about them as a blanket is like that's a beautiful.
They're
all like, good looking people, but they look normal
like people.
And are fucking talented actors and well written and funny and interesting. And then you watch a show and you're like, that's great. But if you put that show and you put Efron, like that's like, you know, like Efron and The Rock doing Baywatch together, is to me, and I love lifeguards.
Of course.
That shit is the accident where you're like, The Rocket and Efron have both been succeeding. Efron in comedies with Rogan.
With Rogan.
The Rock with Kevin Hart.
That's right.
And then it's like,
put them together.
Let's lose the two
comedy elements.
Objectively funny people for the last 15 years.
The two hot guys.
We're just looking at pecs.
Yeah, and that, it's literally just a movie full of hot. And then like you put John Bass in it, and he's gets to be the only funny part because he's a normal funny person.
I like tell punchlines.
He's an actual funny person.
Yes.
Right. But that's like that's the shit that pisses me off where the chemistry people like go. All right, so let's put those two people together. It's like, no, put Kevin Hart and Seth Rogen in the same movie.
Exactly. Yeah, the two comedians.
That's the movie I want to see.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe hard on comedy people, like alpha comedy people to do that with.
Yes.
But
you associate us with positivity, but like, do you not associate yourself with positivity?
I was going to throw that right back at you.
This is something I wanted to talk about
because
I used to consider myself like a positive person. I was kind of always like, let shit roll off my back. But I feel like my sense of humor has gotten like a little. Like, I'm a little bit of a dick, and I enjoy roasting people.
Yeah.
But I never mean it, like, negatively. And I like to...
I don't think people intuit it as you meaning it negatively, which makes it, I think, like, your just, like, sense of humor.
Right.
I interpret it as positive, and, like, that's just your style.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, this is really flattering, because this is, like, exciting, because I always consider myself pretty positive, but then sometimes, you know, like... People will be like, I'll be like, am I being mean? Am I being weird?
You have a show at UCB where the hook is that you bully the audience. And honestly, when I read that, I thought to myself, in anyone else's hands, that's a very bad idea.
Yeah.
But in Gabris's hands, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Like everyone, it's like perfect for you and them. And it's like, it's a perfect joke telling machine for you.
To me, you're an endless font of positive energy. To me, that's how I experience you.
Oh, wow. All right, thank you, guys. But maybe it's a little bit of like, I see you guys, and I'm all of a sudden like
we mirror each other.
Yeah. Which is not a complaint either.
Yeah, I actually think that the team sports thing actually weirdly directly relates because I do feel like there's something about. I feel like people who like grow up in a team sports environment, it's like it could kind of go one or two ways. Like sometimes it's the camaraderie and the team workmanship that is the thing that lasts. Thank God for like the three of us. I feel like that's sustained. But there's also just people who like. grow up in like a pressure cooker team sports atmosphere, and the competitive bettering, like one-upsmanship, is the thing that
steel sharpens steel.
Exactly.
Love the it. Steel sharp. Yeah.
But I think a part of thing, another thing about team sports, and this is comparing it directly to theater stuff or the business.
Yes.
One thing that growing up in a team sports environment teaches you that is the humbling of a meritocracy.
Yes.
Yes.
You cannot say I deserve to be on the field if someone is objectively That's better right. at the sport than you and plays the same position.
Yes. That's
right. And so I think when I was coming up at UCB and people were like, I can't believe I got cut from my Harold team, or I can't believe that person. I'm like, you know?
Yeah. Right.
It's like, if you are not as good at running as the other guy, you don't get to run.
Exactly.
Real Gabrus.
You can go run. You can go hit the track by yourself and enjoy it and have fun.
Real Gabrus.
But if you want to be in the track and field meet, you got to be faster than the person ahead of you.
Work on it.
That's right.
You got to work on it.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's obviously coming from a point of privilege of someone who is good at improv, and I naturally succeeded immediately upon arriving. But
there is something about those platitudes about team sports that do resonate with me, almost in spite of myself. It's not about the name on the back, it's about the name on the front. It's like shit like that still works on me in terms of like, I get emotional just like thinking about that.
I'm self-sacrifice those stupid things for the NFL. We all want that.
It still stirs me in my guts to be like, yeah, it is about the name on the front.
Give me a sports cliche. It works on me.
It always works. And the other thing team sports teaches you that I think is important in the business that I don't think theater or like growing up in any other like the ability to say like being the left guard of a football team sucks. And like, you know what I mean? It's important to the game, but no one is ever like, that was a great pulling block you did, you know? And you're just getting your ass kicked. Right. Yeah, you're getting your ass kicked so someone else can get glory, but you're pumped to be part of it. And anyone who knows the game knows the sport. So like when you're watching a show and you're like, that guy's the glue. You know what I mean? Or that gal's the glue. That person, I'll just say, because it's 2018, that person is the glue. And you're like, they're getting no glory for this, but they are a necessity. And team sports will teach you to be like, maybe you should just be okay long snapping. You get to be on the football team.
What's your lane?
Like, not all of us are meant to be handsome sitcom leads.
There's also something to be said for just losing together. I think it's there's something so, like, winning's awesome, but when you lose together and you wake up the next morning, there's something to be said for, like, sharing that feeling with everyone. And, like, that makes you a better adult. That made me a better adult.
The other things team sports teach you is that there's a game next week.
Right.
You cannot just sit here and go like, I can't believe we lost for 7 days. I can't believe I didn't get that job.
That's right.
I can't believe she dumped me. I can't believe this, blah, blah, whatever.
My best coach has told me how to react to losing. And like, that was like, those were the lessons that I carried with me, where it was just like, those were like the growth things, where it was just like, once you understand that, you can start seeing sympathy for everyone around you. You grow so much faster, and it's humbling. It's really...
Fall 7 times, get up 8. It's like all of those dumb platitudes that I recognize. They work. Are like,
I love hearing them. There's a reason I cry at the third act of every sports movie.
Right.
Like, I cried at... What's the John Hamm cricket one? Like, Million Dollar Arm? Fucking wept. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck about cricket. This is a bad movie. This is an objectively not a good movie. But I was fucking hysterical crying.
Team succeeding together is a real... waterworks, man.
Oh, man. Right. It's enough.
It's a funny thing. Like, I think that my personal brand, Billy's personal brand, is sincerity. Yeah. Somehow I've stumbled into that. Like, this wasn't my... But I think it was born out of, like, early comedy when we'd go get drinks after the show and everyone was shticking so hard. I was like, I haven't talked to one person, but I've been speaking to hundreds. And I was just like, I think I'm gonna just try and twist these conversations towards something,
towards reality. One thing you do that not a lot of people do in life in our business is ask questions about the person. That's something that you do that the first couple of times I'm like, all right, man.
Wait
a minute, you
are interested in me.
This is good.
Was like, leave me alone. And then I was like, wait a minute, what Billy's doing is asking me about my show.
Showing interest.
So we can talk. And I'm like, oh my God, it was weird that it felt unnatural.
The difference you were saying about niceness is like, sometimes people put it on and who knows what's genuine and what's like performative niceness.
Right.
Maggie, my wife, one of the first like sort of times I was like, oh, we're philosophically aligned and I think I love you forever, was that she was like, I don't care about niceness. I don't value that. Kindness. I value kindness. And those two things are different.
Yes.
Like, you can be nice and deeply unkind.
Right.
And you can be a kind person and be rude. And like, be rude. And I don't, like, it's like, I'm rude sometimes. I don't care. And I don't care if you are. Right. I'm deeply kind, and I need to know that you are as well. Yeah. And there's a difference. There's a big difference.
That's a good way to put that. Yeah. I think I talked about it a little bit on the Besser episode, because we were saying nice has the connotation of phoniness.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly right.
Nice. You have to do it sometimes.
Yes. You play nice. You play nice.
You have to be nice sometimes. Like, yes. At work situations, you're like, I guess I got to just be nice.
Yes.
Right.
Rather you... Right. Like, it's like... And no fault to anyone who has to put on nice phoniness.
Yes.
But I have fault for people who put on nice phoniness and are like legit assholes.
Monsters. Yeah.
Right.
Jake Weissman, who we all know from corporate, talks about this a lot and is just like, I don't care if it's fake niceness. Like, be fake to me. I don't care. It just makes it easier.
Yeah.
In terms of just like a day-to-day, like, yeah, I know that like we're being phony with each other. Like, that's better. That's fine.
My wife's openly about that. I'm like, you're so phony sometimes to people. She's like great. Why? It makes
Greece
them happy.
The
it makes
they
them
want.
Happy. I don't have to deal with any shit. It's like, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Just greases the wheels.
There's something nice about that too.
You can be authentic to a fault. Like, yeah, that's like, true. You can easily be one of those guys that's like, hey, that's just how he is. And then you're like, well, I hate how he is.
Right.
That's always my biggest, I stampede it all over you.
Not at all.
But my biggest thing ever is just like, yeah, there he's just sort of like that.
Just John being John.
And you just go like, why? Okay, well then I'm not going to be around that.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So much of being nice is also just surrounding yourself with the people you want to be around.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's easy to be nice when you like everyone around.
That's totally. Right. I mean, like, granted, I don't have like a job where it like puts me in like the company of hundreds of people that I would prefer not to see, but I do have a choice with who my friends are and who I podcast with and who I work out with. And like that inherently makes me a better person.
Yes.
Right. Just being around good people.
Yes.
And it makes you just... be nicer because you're like, I'm happy in this moment.
And
it
like, I remember just, sorry, no, please, no, please. Just like in my career and in my life, I try and see what potential landmines are out there, identify them way in advance and avoid them now. You know what I mean?
Smart, yeah.
People maybe saying yes to a video I don't necessarily want to shoot in 3 weeks. And it's like, but I emailed in haste. You know, it's like, if I can identify that now, everything will be smooth moving forward. Yeah. You know what
I've
I mean?
Only ever said yes in haste to videos.
Yeah.
I've only ever done that. I've
That's
only
a big
ever
difference.
Done that. Yeah.
Same, the only, just this year, and I've talked about this a little bit, and Billy especially has heard this spiel before at the gym. I need to start thinking about the Gabrus. We're recording this in March.
Yes.
I need to think about April Gabrus.
I
need to think about Gabrus next weekend.
Right.
I need to think about Gabrus tomorrow.
Hard to think ahead.
Right now, all I can see is a foot in front
next
of me,
five
and
minutes.
I just make decisions like that.
So real.
Johnny.
Yeah. So real.
I heard in an interview with Tim Ferriss, who I love and hate for a lot of different
reasons. The Workweek guy? Like
yeah.
Before,
yes. Yeah. Yes. He's got great podcasts where he interviews like brilliant minds. And like one thing I took away from a person told him, here's the mantra I use when people ask me to do stuff. Call it the This Tuesday mantra. Do you, if the plans you're trying to make are this Tuesday, like imagine saying like, hey, in 3 weeks, you want to shoot this video. Mm-hmm. Imagine instead it's this Tuesday.
Nice.
Is it
nice
going to be a problem? Because eventually it's going to be
Tuesday.
This Tuesday. Right.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yes.
So think about it right now, because it's easy, because we all do that. You say yes to like five things. Then all of a sudden you're like, I have to shoot a 10-hour video and do a random bit show that
on a
night.
Sunday?
Yes.
Fuck. And the Saturday night before is my friend's birthday
I said
yes to, and I got to be up early. And then you look at it and you're like, this is killing me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And now when you get older, I'm in my late 30s, technically mid to late 30s.
Yes.
You start to be like, this is physically affecting
me.
Yeah.
I feel taxed.
Yeah. And I wasted... Maybe the party was the thing to skip, or the video was the thing to skip, or this bit show was the thing to skip.
Yes.
Maybe one of them, maybe none of them.
But being so selfless is killing me.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Yeah. And it's not selfless. It's more like, for me, it's FOMO of like,
right.
What if this is the video
that
breaks?
Yeah. Right.
What if this is the meeting that really works? What if this is the coffee with a random person?
I think all of our peers can relate exactly.
Oh, my God.
100%.
And that's the problem is because it... That is true.
It is totally true.
And that's also the psychotic thing about like why people feel compelled in this town to be like nice, nice, nice. Because it's like you never know who you're being nice or not nice to. And like there's a pressure to be like default to extremely pleasant.
Right.
Just like default to being like a more pleasant version of yourself than is natural.
Right.
Because
which is why like authenticity to me goes so much further than being nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like if you can be authentic, it's like, or even just like have self-awareness, you can be an asshole as long as you know you're even an asshole.
That's right.
Because then I can look at you and know the rules of this relationship.
Yes.
Funny you say that because I think that's what I've been using as my sort of like, you said your personal brand is sincerity. My personal brand, I think, is being like uncomfortably true. And so that way, if you don't like me, at least you know you're not going to like, I'm not going to. Three days into working together, you're not going to go like,
whoa,
I actually hate this
guy.
That's
right.
Yes.
You'll meet me and go, not for me, but I guess I'm here with him this whole time. Because like, you know, there's all this shit with like people getting jobs and then like they have to scrub their Twitter because they said offensive things or they shit talk to show that they now work on.
Yes. Right.
And like I was talking about that with my manager actually, because I posted a video of me, a picture of me smoking a joint in a hot tub.
Yes.
And he was like, I'm not sure if that's like the best thing to put out there in case you want to. I'm like, hey,
you don't know this about me already.
Yeah, my podcast?
And that's when I said, like, I am so, I'm so not pretending to be someone else that when I say something that's kind of fucked up, people are like, he might actually believe that.
Yeah.
But I at least know it's not like, I've heard him say other, like the thing I said to my manager was like, this is not going to be the reason I don't get hired for something.
Right. Have you heard the Thanksgiving Power Hour episode?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was about to say, fired from jobs I don't have for that.
There's like 150 hours of me being myself super confessionally. Right. And then there's 100 and something hours of me being Gino Lombardo on Comedy Bang Bang.
Right.
Where I'm espousing opinions and my voice sounds no different.
Yeah. Right.
So if you just like played that, you could be like, this is Gabrus saying he fucked a priest on purpose.
Right,
you
know? Right.
It is funny to me that like we're in comedy, especially with the podcastness of it all. And like how many hours of podcasting have we done collectively? So many.
So
and it's
many.
Just so funny to think that like our I just think about like our kids and like our grand like these this is forever and like what a record of John Gabrus's life through
always your podcast. Wonder, like, I have like a 17-year-old son. He's gonna be like, do you know my dad has like 150,000
yeah, I know
some podcasts
and it's like or like you know you're like sometimes it happens where someone's like I can imagine like a friend's kid is like, yeah.
Hey, you know your dad was Gino Lombardo for years.
Yeah, yeah, for years.
Yeah, yeah. You know your dad casually said WAP for like a year.
Yeah. The good news is that all of our kids will casually say WAP do what I do or do what Adam's like. They're all just gonna be us again.
All me and Tiff talk about is when we eventually have kids, they're gonna be fat, gay assholes. They're gonna just be so full of them, like they're gonna be like, I come from the most confident family.
Exactly. My name is WAP. I can't believe they named me that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to kick everyone's ass. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Here's another slightly stonery tangent. Maggie and I sometimes discuss, you know, all of our pictures are online now. It's just like no one prints out pictures and like everything's like digital. And Maggie's like, I wonder if like in our grandkids are going to have all of the photos of us or none. Exactly. Because it kind of feels like it's going to be one of the two. Like either our kids are going to have all the, every podcast you ever did, John, every photo you ever took of you in a joint with a bathtub or a hot tub, but or it's gonna all be like wiped one day forever by
right. Who? Yeah. What do you mean?
Someone will hack and all of a sudden like
Facebook or
possible,
like
possible yeah. Yeah like
the
it's
cloud
just like, yeah. Yes
all exactly these can just it'll disappear. Just go
or
one
like
day,
yeah something we don't even know about yet you know like
yeah
okay so now stonery tangent
yes
that's what Moore's law is. Moore's law is that like computers get so much more powerful like exponentially
yeah
that like you know 10 years ago computers could do less than a fraction of what they can do now and we cannot see
that's right
what the possibility
that's
is
totally
with computers,
right
what can is
spins
good or
out
bad.
Of control
yeah.
Exactly
another example of this and I don't know what it's called but while we're on stoner tangent
yes
there's this great story that in like 1800s New York they in Manhattan they had a huge horse shit problem from all the horse drawn carriages. It was like
yeah, of course.
Toxic people like there was horse shit
man.
They could not they didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So they brought all the most brilliant minds from like all around the world to come to Manhattan to have like a conclave, a scientific
this
conclave
is your second
of like
screenplay.
Of what we can do about this horse shit.
This is your second
and shit council.
And they everyone had different ideas trying and then the thing that no one foresaw was cars.
Cars. Yeah.
They were like,
you don't know
we're
what's
not going to have horses.
Right.
But no one saw that.
Yeah.
Right.
Eventually they'd be like, oh, horse shit's no longer a problem.
You don't know what you don't know.
Right. We were like trying to figure out oil for so long.
Yeah.
Right.
Oil is
right.
stressful. It's like, now we sort of don't need it anymore.
And now we're like obsessed with like clean gas. Like, how are we going to make these like cars clean? In 10 years, cars will be forgotten. Like, there will be no cars.
In 10 years, they'll
robot
be like,
horses.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm praying for like full blown, like, you know, not like Ubers, but like, train stations that are just like so fast and so ubiquitous where it's like at the corner of X and X, you can get on and get off and blah, blah.
Have
and
you seen the
like,
Elon Musk thing where it's not train stations, it's just pods? It's just like where you just get dropped, your car gets dropped into the sidewalk, basically. It's just like this whole, did you see it, Adam?
Underground, under the 405, a freeway that's underground, essentially.
Yeah. But it's not stations where multiple vehicles go in. It's literally just like, your car drops, your train goes in, your train. It's like all very pockets. It's like exactly what you're saying. On like
so
every
cool.
corner.
Yeah.
That's the future.
Yeah.
That's
right.
The future is mass transit. But because we know how people like are going to dig their heels in on cars, like that auto driving car just killed someone in like Arizona.
How did that happen? What was the cause exactly?
The woman stepped into the street
and
didn't see the car, and the car didn't stop in time, or something
did
like that.
Did it keep driving?
It had a safety person in it too.
Oh, damn!
Override,
and it's crazy. And you know, people are all stressed, but it's like, I'm sure 500 other people died from car accidents that
driven
week
by humans. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Also, just jump right in front of one to make a political statement if they want to. Right. You know, it's like these things aren't bubbles that can't kill.
Right. But also at the same time, it's like, we, I mean, this is such a stupid libtard parallel, but it's like, we can't ban, they're like, Uber is suspending automatic car technology until we figure it out. It's like, one death is like
one
nothing.
Getting people around.
A thing I would not want to say to that family of that person.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Of course, of course. Hey, come on, just one.
Yeah. You're getting an email from your manager about that last sentence you just said.
We know so many people who've been affected negatively by car accidents. Like, yes, you know, exactly. It's a very, maybe it was Dominic Dirkus or someone one time was just like, isn't it crazy that you're just like in a 2,000 pound death machine?
Dominic has the funniest stand-up bit about that. Yeah, he has hysterical.
That's what it's
when he's like talking to like his kid or like his future grandson about like, he's like, wasn't it dangerous?
It's like,
like the number one reason everyone died in America for years.
Like, how'd you park it? We just sort of like looked over our shoulder and just kind of wung it. Just kind of wung it in there.
That's what it was.
That is what
it's
it feels like.
An actual bit. I'm remembering it as a conversation. Yeah,
it was Conan. That was a really funny bit. Yeah. I remember that too.
Hysterical. Yeah. Getting people around is still like so, I mean, Cynthia Nixon literally just announced her running for governorship based on the one issue of the New York City subways. That is why she's running.
And you know why she was late to that press conference?
The subway?
Subway was late.
Dude, I saw that video. She's like literally stuck on a subway going to run to be governor because of the issues.
That's exactly right.
She gave great faces to the camera for like, these will be usable shots. Like, I'm stressed, of course. I roll. I was like, she's an actress and she's probably the governor.
Exactly right.
Right.
But even just in that moment when we were like, yes, that death is upsetting, but that's sort of positivity in a way. Yeah, it's like, no, we're looking at the price. Don't lose the sight on progress.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's 100% sure.
Yeah. I have almost pathologically positive parents. So I think that sort of trickled down. They're like,
oh, I have the exact opposite.
Really?
That's so
Do
funny.
You?
Yeah, I counter. So wait, tell me more about your parents.
They're just like, they're just aggressively sunshiny. My mom more than my dad. It's just like very.
But not phony. You don't think it's a little bit of phoniness?
No, I don't think it's phony. No, I think that my mom is like a real. Because you'll know when she's sad or mad or upset, and that happens too. But for the most part, she is like.
She is bright side of life.
Yes.
She is truly bright side of life.
There actively practices positive thinking.
That's like the least. That's like the least surprising thing is that you had like a supporting, nice mom.
Just like loving
and then
wonderful.
I finally got to meet Billy's parents or see Billy's parents at your engagement party. And I was like, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And then when you meet my parents, you're like, oh, I could see how you might end up the way you are.
Right. Yeah, I had really supportive parents, and they were also like, in Rockwell Center in Long Island, it's like pretty Republican and pretty like a union worker. You know, you work on Wall Street. You have like very specific jobs and you make a lot of money.
There's
and
a traditionalism to it.
Yeah, very traditional and just kind of like straight and narrow. And like my mom, for the most part, was like known as like a local actress. My father was a musician. And like we were not weird, but we were
artists.
Different. Yeah. We were different than all my friends' parents. And so there's something really nice about growing up and being like, oh, that's the house you want to be in. Like,
right.
I love
that's the
that
house
out.
I want to have for my children.
That's right.
Right. It's like what you had.
My parents,
really
they could, but like other parents on the side of the soccer line, like soccer field, were like cheering in a very specific way. And as a kid, I was like, oh, that's like what I think cool parents look like. Yeah. And then I grew up and I was like, nope, mine were the good ones.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mine was more like just look over to the sideline and be like, oh, weird. Your parents are here? Do you think I get a ride home?
Yeah. That's funny.
Your parents know about these games, huh?
I shit on my parents a lot for being like unsupportive, but my parents were like, poor and worked insanely hard to make us like lower middle class.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I can't fall. I did go to college and find myself and become a comedian and all that because of what they did
Absolutely.
For me. Yeah. So I can't really.
What
but they weren't
do?
Like openly supportive. And my mom still really isn't.
Yeah.
Like I'll be like, I told my mom about like a recent pilot test. Yeah. She's never asked a follow up.
Yeah.
I sent my fam the group chat like drunk history. My brother DVR'd it for my mom at the house. Never heard from her about it.
Is it too deep to ask? Why do you think that is? Like, is that just her nature? Was she the way she was raised?
She's just got a layer of self centered, and like I'm even comfortable talking about this because I know she doesn't even know what my podcast is or what
right.
a podcast.
That's real.
And I understand not knowing fully what a podcast is, but even my and I never really thought. I just thought no one's parents were supportive growing up. You know what I mean?
Because
my closest friends were latchkey kids too, and we were kind of just like rode our bikes two towns over and played Magic the Gathering with weird 40-year-old men,
Stranger Things style. Yeah.
We were literally like Stranger Things if the kids decided to be scumbags instead of like adventurers. If they were like, should we light a fire? Like that's
very
what
low level goals.
Not trying to save 11.
We were like the
the tires burned. Let's just try
we just
and
light a fire.
Yeah. We were like the Stranger Things kids, except we found out that the pizza guy would buy you 40s if you gave him an extra $5. Yeah.
Love that.
Thank you, Paulie, at Super Pizza. You had to be retired by now, so I don't feel like I'm blowing up your spot.
Love that.
Yeah. Oh, that's if so you are in the Belmore area, I know I always talk up Gino's, my favorite pizzeria, but don't be afraid to your favorite pizza. Everyone's
Gino's.
Favorite pizzeria.
If you're on Long Island, you go to Gino's.
There's like six Gino's too. Yeah. But don't be afraid to support Super Pizza on Belmore Avenue.
Got it.
Yeah. One time I played football with the owner. He's a great guy.
Very good.
One time Adam asked me on the podcast on No Joke. He said, "What do you think you would have to do in like to be like banished from Long Island?"
Yeah.
We just like heard of somebody who was like banished from their town. He's like, "What would you have to do?" And I like thought about it for a second. I was like, I think I would have to publicly disparage Gino's.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be like, Gino's sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
And people would send me immediately.
Those are two the two choices to be banished from Long Island are say Gino's sucks or say I'm gay.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah.
The city's,
go to the city,
the
queer.
City's west, queer.
Tim Dillon, great comedian.
Oh, so funny.
So funny.
Wow.
On the podcast. The quote that he said about Long Island that has stuck with me and I've more or less stolen it was 30 minutes away. 40 years behind.
Yeah. No doubt, man.
From New York City. It's like, I'm like, you know, you have friends. They're like, fuck the city.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're like, what? Fuck the city. It's like the Natural History Museum is a drive.
There's magic 15 miles away.
I know. I had a little bit of bitterness to it, like when I was living in the city and everyone's like, have you ever been to the Statue of Liberty? I was like, yeah, I went when I was 12.
Yeah.
Sucked.
Right. Yeah.
It's like,
right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Have you ever been to the Natural History Museum?
Shit.
Yeah. Sucked.
They made us go. Had to go.
Right. Had to go. Stupid ass future. I want to go to Adventure.
Yeah, man.
So my mother grew up in East Rockaway, the town over, and this is a sort of a perfect example of her positive thinking. So she grew up on Long Island, loved it, and like because she's a child and just like grew up with her own loving, supportive parents, and like that was great. Left at 17 to go to college, has never lived back in Long Island as an adult. So for her, Long Island is like frozen in adolescent romance.
Yeah.
Right. So she chooses to only see the wonderful, beautiful things. She really leans into nostalgia so hard. It's like only a place of pure nostalgia.
I will
for
say
her.
That me and Gabrus are pretty guilty of that too when it comes to Long
Island. Well,
like the way we talk about it versus the way that we are probably when we're standing in Long Island.
No,
the greatest place on earth, greatest food on earth, greatest people on earth, the attitudes, the parties. Jesus Christ, it's cold and people are giving me the finger everywhere.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like to choosing to like deliberately choosing even against almost your intellect to like be positive about it.
Right.
To like choose to see it positively.
Me and my brother were going somewhere. Yeah. I forget where we were going, but like, do you want to go to Dunkin' in the morning? We're like, let's get some coffees and some sausage, egg, and cheese or whatever. We go in and then the most Long Island guy, you know, it's like, it's not that cold out, but he has like a paint-covered hoodie and jeans on and his hands are like so dry.
Construction jobs.
His face is like brown, red, like, and pockmarked.
Like Windburnt from Game of
I'm like, this dude just works outside on Long Island, and he comes in and he's behind
covered
us in line,
cement.
and we're waiting for our food. He goes up to order. He's like, "Let me get a sausage egg." Ah, fuck, you know, Jesus Christ, I can't have this fucking sausage anymore. And he's just going off, and me and my brother are looking at each other, and I'm like, in that moment, I'm visining. I'm like, I miss this place.
I miss this place.
This dude is just and the nice woman who is of an ethnicity I cannot determine and not doesn't speak the best English that's working there is smiling at an adult man who probably has said disparaging things about her country in his own time, but as he's going, oh fuck,
I can't
forget if he wanted the fucking vanilla or the hazelnut,
right?
And then he like turns to us and he's like, I'm a fucking mess, huh? And we're like, bro, hey, it's early. I'm like, it's early. We make the joke like, hey, we're about to go smoke a blunt. And he's like, I fucking wish, bro.
Yeah,
you
know? I know.
And I'm like, yes,
I love it here.
Last time I was in Long Island, a new pizza spot opened up and like no one was going there, but it looked legit. And so there was a huge grand opening sign and like the guy behind the counter was standing there and I was like, listen, I've been to Gino's 7 times in 3 days. Like I'm going to go to this other pizza place and just like show him a little love. And so I walk in and everything is just like buy the pie, buy the like buy this pie, like, you know, no slices.
No slices.
And so I'm like looking around and the guy's just like staring at me like, please order for me, kid. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to show this guy some love. And I'm like, hey, can I, do you do like slices by, do you just do slices? Yeah. And he looks at me and he goes, what do I look like, a fucking rookie? Of course we do slices. Okay. I was like, I'm just trying to show you love, motherfucker. Like,
a little fall casual back. Hostility.
Fall back, Paulie. And he just looks at me. He's like, what do I look like, a fucking rookie?
Yeah,
I was
so
like, what
awesome.
If I'm from another town?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not appropriate, man.
But that is not inappropriate either on
it's
Long Island.
Totally inappropriate.
Yeah.
That's why
and
I
that's
love
what,
it.
That's like its dark mark against it in a lot of people's books is like someone will talk to you like that.
Affection via hostility. Yeah. Just like you show affection via hostility. A little bit of hostility.
Yeah. That's definitely part of my brand, I would say. It's like, I'm mean, and I think I mean it at a love.
And I think I'm realizing in this conversation that I reacted to that and it made me the way I am, which is that I'm really the opposite of you in a lot of ways, where I'm not hostile towards people. Yeah. I'm not sarcastic towards people. My sense of humor isn't to put people down.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I was surrounded by it growing up.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And my whole group of friends, they were just killing each other. And sometimes I'd literally be sitting there like, why do we talk to each other like this? This is insane. Yeah. As like a 15-year-old.
That's how we talked in my immediate family. Really? If I couldn't do this, my brothers and my dad would have beaten me down to nobody.
In my group of
friends, had to like my dad would be like, "Hey, you fat fuck," you know, like, and you have to be like, "Okay."
In Long Island, identify what's probably the most like vulnerable thing about that person, or thing they're most like self-aware of,
or whatever. Like literally, the other one is like their guess who characteristic.
Yeah, exactly.
Eyeball, it's like bald.
Bald, fucking
gray hair. Got it.
Don't need to think any more about you. Right. I don't need to think about you any deeper than that.
I don't care if you're bald and because it's chemo.
Doesn't
and
matter.
You're a fucking
bald, stupid fuck.
Navy SEAL sniper. Right. None of that matters. He's like, this fucking guy can't even keep his fucking
hat. You bald
ass. Hey, who's got a hat?
Yeah, who's got a hat? Is exactly the insult you're
doing. Who can lend this fucking guy a hat? I'm tired of looking at him over
here. Hey, egghead.
Hey, you sure you don't want to put a little sunscreen on there? Yeah. You know, it's fucking bright in here.
Yeah. With love, they're going to be insulting.
Yeah. I think I probably would have crumbled.
I think I'm going to react and be the other.
Yeah.
That's great, though. Bring the knife. I think that's why I had a minor success at Wildin' Out, because I could take it and dish it out.
Exactly.
And I'm good at that, like, all right.
Insult.
Yeah. Also, I think I was one of the people, like, as one of the only white people, I can make black jokes.
Yes, that's true.
Since they're making white jokes the whole time, I'm like, it's kind of open where I could be coming in and
Were you writing those yourself? Were you coming up with your own rhymes?
It was all improvised.
Yeah, got it.
But I came up. I didn't do the wild style all too much, but every once in a while, if someone came at me, I had like 10 couplets in my head. Because I can
I can't really do rhythm,
but I can do thinking fast enough to rhyme.
Yes.
And if I know the punchline, I'll think a
reverse engineer that.
I'll reverse engineer it. I'm like, all right, I want to say ball.
You know what I mean?
So it's like, hey, I haven't gotten laid since the last time your mother called.
Exactly.
You know, hey, I may have blah, 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 blah.
You're bald, asshole. Yeah.
And I'll just like muscle my way to it.
Cast
and
them.
It doesn't fit the rhythm at all.
Doesn't
people kind of look weird.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I just got to get to the word.
Yeah, that's a stressful show. Like Adam and I have done a lot of like Eliza Skinner's like freestyle rap battle shows at UCB. And it's like, even like UTK and like Donald Glover's done it. Like everyone's stressed backstage.
I know.
It's just like,
it's not
gotta,
easy.
Like, yeah. It's like, because you got to be funny. You got to be charming. You got to be all these things.
And rhythmic.
You have to be two different skills, being funny and rapping, freestyling, are two different skills that are so difficult.
So disparate.
So disparate.
To do both. And also, like, if you go out at that show and bust sick freestyles, but they're not funny, no wins.
You can
be hysterical, but if they sound terrible, you get no noise.
Middleditch is the master. He never tries to charm the audience.
Who's that?
Thomas Middleditch.
Oh, geez.
He just shows all of his insecurities. He lays them all out there.
Honesty.
He begs for the crowd to vote him off, and the crowd wants more.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching.
Reverse
like,
psychology.
This motherfucker.
So fun.
Reverse psychology. So well played, Thomas.
Utkarsh is the funniest example, because he's like essentially the closest thing that you can be to like a professional freestyle rapper.
He's on ESPN.
He's incredible.
NBA commercials rapping.
And we do these shows with him, and he's like, I'm so sick. Right before we got, he's like, I'm so sick to my stomach. I feel nauseous.
He's like, I'm drinking. I'm nervous.
Not to mention, he's like a handsome, like
gorgeous
prince.
Golden god. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's like, you're nervous? You're good at this.
You've got it all.
For the listeners, Utkarsh, who's going to be a guest on this podcast, love the dude, UTK.
Oh, yeah.
Him and I have he's in the movie Game Over Man that's coming out to Netflix, I think next week, based on when this episode comes out.
Right, so are you?
And so am I. And
nice,
I have a crazy scene, and it's with UTK.
Yes.
I'm going to give no spoilers.
Oh, great.
But watch the scene that UTK and I have together. It's in
When does it come out, that movie? Oh, I'm going to watch the hell out of
that. Hell next weekend?
I'm going to the premiere tonight.
Cool.
So the movie, I think, comes out this weekend.
Great.
Badass.
And so I think this episode comes out tomorrow. I'm doing mental time travel.
Yeah, you're like,
I think it comes out this weekend if you're listening right now.
Not easy.
It's on Netflix. I've got a fucking weird... The movie looks fun.
Yeah.
The only thing I've ever seen was my scene when I went to do ADR.
Yes.
And it's fucking weird. And I don't want to tout it, but I think it's going to be very funny.
Great. Very good.
I think it's going to be a funny set piece in a funny movie.
Great. I trust that it will.
We will watch that. Yeah.
Can I use this time to plug something?
Yeah.
I just released a short film.
Yes.
Triple Kiss.
Triple Kiss on Vimeo.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm trying to do as many podcasts as I can to say those words. Please, if you have a minute, watch Triple Kiss.
It's
on
got
Vimeo.
Some of the best actors I know: Matt Hobby, Mamrie Hart, George Basil. That's it.
That's it.
That was
and some bald
mint.
Asshole.
Mint.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Mint.
And I think Malkovich.
Mint, Gabrus.
See, coin.
He didn't need a beat. Laughing. He did not need a beat. He did not need a beat. Yeah. And Adam Lustig. But yeah, it's on Vimeo. I'm not going to sell it too much, but it's 11 minutes. It's pretty silly.
It's really,
it's
really promoting.
Fun. It's so really fun. Sweet. I just watched it yesterday in preparation for
it's
this.
It's very good.
It's like very like stone. Like if you're a stoner, I would say get a little high and watch this weird movie.
Dreamy. Yeah. It's dreamy.
It's very,
yeah, it's
dreamy.
Very
dreamy.
Yeah.
It's very
I like the close-up conversation between you and Hobbit.
And Matt, yeah.
I think that's really fun, like the low angle,
yes.
Like sort of like the same Beverly.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so much, like, making a short film is so brutal. Like, yeah. It's such like a... something you ask for. It's like such a project where it's like me and just me and I'm seeing through all of this
and
stuff.
And then you're like asking favors or managing people or paying
100%. But I gotta say, when it's over and like you like actually can put it live and it's not a sketch, it's not like something you shot on your phone, it's like really took like nurturing and music. It's such a rewarding feeling.
Totally. Right, to
it's,
have done it.
To like look back and be like, that took 12 months. That's like a lot of time. And like you did it.
Yeah.
You set out to do it and you did it.
Like running sucks, but having ran feels great.
Exactly, Gabrus. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
I know what you mean.
You've lofted out the idea of maybe doing a short film. Is that something you'd ever put yourself, hold yourself accountable to?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I've written a couple of shorts that are like more than sketches.
Yeah.
And I got into TV because I wanted to be a director. So I feel
really?
Like, yeah. But I'm just like, it's not my skill set. And I'm
so
like
what?
A little.
What's not your skill set?
I think. Being off camera, like I don't
really.
I think I have such like an attention desire. Like,
well, you're great on camera.
Right.
No one's disputing that.
Yeah, that's, right, right.
But and does off camera like does that actually appeal to you? Or
yeah,
is that kind of like
certainly if like I'm working with people I want to work with,
right.
It really excites me. Yeah,
surround
yeah.
yourself with the right
yeah.
team. Give it
oh,
a test.
Fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll set Adam up for a plug here
please.
Too. Corporate, if you
hey.
Haven't caught it yet, it's
yes,
on the
please
app.
Do. Yeah.
You can set your DVR. I'm sure they're rerunning it.
I think they're gonna rerun it,
and
I guess.
It's coming
yeah,
back
it's like
regardless. But
yeah, season two is gonna
it's
be out.
So fucking funny.
You,
I haven't
Thanks,
liked
man.
A new comedy in a while.
It came out pretty
yeah.
well. Yeah,
yeah. It's
super
really
proud of it.
And we're just talking about short film. It's wildly cinematic.
It is very cinematic. Yeah, I think they tried to almost to go out and make a little each episode almost its own little short film.
Yeah,
in a way.
It's,
huh?
it's
it
got
very deliberately
finchery kind of yellowy Zodiac vibe,
yeah.
which I really like.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And speaking of positivity, the point of view is wildly bleak.
Yes.
Of the
it's
series.
Really
it's very very bleak.
It's
yeah.
really funny to see yeah. you in that. You're such a good actor. You're so magnetic.
Thanks,
so fun to watch. But you're like supposed to be sort of like fake positive. Your character sort of like you're a monster, but you're like outwardly Lustig. And it's like such an interesting dynamic to see you.
I
do.
Think that's probably one of the reasons that I think that in like a horrible corporate context, like niceness. That's when niceness really, the phoniness of niceness is flagrant.
Right.
If you're like in an office environment, everyone's miserable, everyone wants to die. So if you're nice, that's mean. You're being mean.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Someone comes in and is like, hey, man. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. It's like a rude thing to do.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
We might as well talked about positivity.
Yeah, we did.
We said it like 10 or 12 times.
Yeah, yeah. We got all our plugs in there. Leading with mine, of course. Yeah. As you want to do as a come on my podcast and listen to my plugs.
Can I before you wrap up? You know what I realized, John?
What?
You never read any insults.
Oh shit! Well, we got into it right off the gate.
We did.
I don't know.
A couple before we get at it.
I'm not begging for it.
No, I want to hear some.
Do you want the full high and mighty experience?
Yes, we
do. Have it.
I just don't want to shortchange us, JG.
This is called A Tale of Desperation and Woe from Paulie Walnuts 55.
Good. Okay.
So, if you're listening for the first time, you're a Snakes fan that's just jumping over here to listen.
Yeah, right.
If you rate me 5 stars and roast me in the comments on iTunes on Apple Podcasts, I will read it. High and Mighty is the harrowing tale of a desperate man's losing battle with a failed acting career and a terminal weight problem. Have a hanky ready as you delve into the doomed final attempts of this pathetic individual to stave off a humiliating, violent death on the toilet through a series of painful jokes and obscure, awful 90s TV references. High and Mighty will make you feel better about yourself as a person and... wait. This isn't the long-lost series of audio tapes of Marlon Brando's final days. Oh, good God. 5 stars.
Oh, wow. Good one. That was a well-composed insult. Yeah.
I'm a fellow. Oh, this is from J.G. Clark begging his listeners to buy underwear. I'm a fellow late 30s white guy who brought a pair of underwear at your suggestion using your promo code because you begged your listeners to do that while simultaneously complaining about your one advertiser on air. Love the show. 5 stars.
That's a good one.
Got some new advertisers lined up. Possibly during this episode, so I'll have to look it up.
It's really funny.
That just undoes me. Thank you, J.G. Clark.
That's really funny.
This is from 219. The title is Dead Dads. Much as I would love to hear Gabrus say handheld midgets on his podcast, I can't do one of those mean reviews. Ah, fuck you.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you. Okay, here's one last one. Listen to this fat windbag talk over his guests from Wicked Dopey.
That's the title.
One good thing about this podcast is that it'll be over soon, as Jabba Jibble Nuts will likely be eating himself to death in the near future. Then there will be one less mediocre podcast host interrupting and talking over their guests. Plus, no one will be forced to sit through the embarrassingly long introduction. The only source of talent come in the form of the dog. More of the dog and less of Jabba. Okay.
Thanks, well,
there's,
guys.
There's two more short ones. One of them I want to read
Jabba
while Billy's
Jibble
here.
Nuts.
This one's from Hot Girl with a Mustache.
Good.
A comedian, question mark, is the title. It just says, time to get a real job, Jimmy.
Oh, definitely
good.
From Long
that's
Island.
A good one.
Yeah. Wait, there's a couple of fun short ones. This is from Marty Escobar called Good Try. This is John's honest attempt at being good and funny, and he comes very close.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. And then here's one last one for you. This is from Rob. The title of the review is John's Working Out? Question mark. Uh-huh. And then the review just says, oh, wait, he reminded us again.
First 30 minutes of this podcast.
That's so perfect. Yeah.
Oh, your listeners know you well.
For people listening, it's like, I'm always like, yeah, I got to get in shape. And then like five episodes later, been working out, feeling great. Five episodes later, my shit's hit the fan. My like, yeah. Yeah. It's just like constantly people are like, just listening to a guy self-destruct over here. Someday a fan will do a super cut.
Yeah.
That'll I'll give my son good. Someday. I'll give him an hour-long thing.
Give my son an hour-long super cut of all the times I've referenced my body.
Shit. You were talking about, like, will our kids have all of our videos and stuff?
Yeah.
Something I've always thought about was, like, when, you know, Danny Gabrus is born, DannyGabrus@gmail.com.
Yeah.
I send him an email like once a month when he's zero.
Yeah.
I get him an email address and I send him an email once a month that's like, this is what's happening now. Here's a picture of you. You took your first steps, blah, blah,
amazing.
Blah. And then when they're of age to have an email, I'm like, you have an email. You can read these letters whenever you want.
He's 14. He opens like 500 unread emails. What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm stressed as fuck.
Spam.
Yeah.
Spam. delete.
It's the only thing I've actually written in.
heartfeltdad@gmail.com.
Delete.
What the hell is that? Yeah. Delete.
Spam. Phones are weird.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for
doing
this.
For
I appreciate it. It's torrential in LA, so it's the time to cancel even indoor plans.
Forget it.
But I appreciate you guys going here. So guys, listen to the No Joke podcast, which is your podcast, also on the HeadGum Network.
Yes, sir.
Watch Corporate. Watch Triple Kiss.
Yes.
Watch Game Show, the TV show.
Talk Show, the Game Show.
Yeah.
I've called it. Five things, like
every permutation.
Every time.
You said my last name correctly, which is the hardest part.
You
said Scafuri.
Yeah,
I appreciated that.
Wait, how do people say it?
Scafuri.
Furry.
Oh,
Scafuri. Take a liquid you in there. Liquid you.
Liquid
you. Scafuri.
Yeah.
Hey, Scafuri.
Hey, it's Scafuri.
Hey, Scafuri. Get the fuck over here.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking Scafuri, this guy in the fucking Meadowlands parking lot.
See,
don't even have to make
any. I'll fucking Scafuri this guy in the Meadowlands parking lot.
Doesn't need
to mean
anything.
I got Scafuri'd at fucking Nassau Coliseum once.
When my best friend was hot, he would just say, "I'm hotter than a cat with no self-esteem." And it's like, what are you talking about?
Long Island idioms that are only local to Long Island.
Oh yeah, hotter than a cat with no self-esteem.
Yeah. This is more global, but the first time I heard someone say that guy. He's fucking crazier than a shithouse rat. It's like my favorite expression I've ever heard. I was like, oh my God, that would be a crazy thing.
Think about that rat.
What a shithouse is, but it sounds
crazy. Yeah. Like shithouse.
Bathroom? Bathroom rat?
Yeah.
Guys, thanks
for having
again.
Us, Johnny.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.